Check out my newly renamed podcast, Democracy on Fire with Kay Brown, where we'll discuss the ongoing conflict with Iran and its implications for our economy, security, and upcoming elections. Hope to see you there. Democracy on Fire on United America Network.
Welcome to Hotspots on the United America Network. From the shifting landscapes of politics and culture to the urgent challenges facing our planet and our communities, this is where the conversations that matter most come alive. With her experience as a journalist, legislator, and activist, Kay Brown brings sharp insight, uplifting perspective, and unflinching courage to the issues shaping our future. Get ready for candid conversations, bold ideas, and the pushback our times demand. Now, here's Kay.
Hello and welcome to Hotspots. Today we'll be discussing the Arctic's catastrophic meltdown that's accelerating the world's warming and what we can do to protect the Arctic and keep it frozen. My guests today are Kervil Baird and Vedika Mandapati. Kervil is an Arctic angel from Trinidad and Tobago. Trinidad and Tobago is a twin island country, an independent nation off the northeast coast of Venezuela, and an important cultural and economic hub in the southern Caribbean region. She's a PhD student at Portland State University, focused on water quality through the management of microplastics. She has a Master of Science in Environmental Hazards and Risks Management from the University of Côte d'Azur, and a BS in Environmental Science from the University of Connecticut. She joined the Global Choices Arctic Angels Network in 2021. Kervil has worked with several international youth organizations and is a member of the Society of Environmental Toxicology and Chemistry and the International Water Resources Association. Vedika Mandapati is a policy analyst and outreach officer at Global Choices and an Arctic angel from India. She presently works on a proposed moratorium on exploitative activities in the Central Arctic Ocean, handling policy and international advocacy. She works on an international network advocating for comprehensive global governance and is based between Georgetown and Sunway Universities. Vedika studied political science and international relations at the University of Cambridge, where she helped win a pause on fossil fuel interests funding of climate research as part of Cambridge's Climate Justice Program and the Campus Climate Network. Welcome so much to both of you. Thank you for being with me.
Thank you so much for having us, Kay. We're delighted to be here.
Kervil, we'll start with you. Tell me a little bit about yourself and what motivates you to be involved in protecting the Arctic.
Okay, well, my interest stems from my training in the environment, and I went to school in Trinidad in the Caribbean, where learning about the Arctic and the cryosphere wasn't our priority. And I took that interest upon myself. I had opportunity to learn more when I studied in Connecticut. And in 2018, I was able to attend the high-level political forum at the United Nations headquarters in New York while doing an internship with an NGO in Connecticut. And I learned about YONGO, the youth constituency of the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change. And through that work, in which I did during the pandemic, so from 2020, I was able to learn about many youth opportunities. And one of them was an expedition to Antarctica. And that led me to the Arctic Angels Network with Global Choices, with whom I've been able to join this advocacy on the 10-year moratorium on deep sea mining in the Arctic.
How about you, Vedika?
Yeah, so I was brought to the Arctic also in a similar way. I was engaged in youth climate work more broadly. And actually, one of the co-founders of Global Choices was giving a talk at my college that just seemed really interesting. And I went to check it out and was absolutely floored by how important the Arctic is to the rest of the world. I had the opportunity to join Crevel and lots of other young women in the Arctic Angels Network and learn from them. And since then, it's been nothing but focus on Arctic advocacy for me.
Vedika, I'll start with you on this question. How does what happens in the Arctic affect India? It's a long way from the Arctic. And why are you focusing on the Arctic?
Yeah, it definitely is a long way. And it might not seem like an obvious connection, but actually there's really, really deep systemic links between an ecosystem one place and an ecosystem far away. So sea ice has a global climate regulatory function. It reflects sunlight and prevents warming. It also is responsible for maintaining oceanic currents and atmospheric currents. And basically what that means is that it can have control over rainfall patterns and extreme weather events really far away. So for an example, there's now really clear studies linking Arctic sea ice retreat to the Indian monsoon. And India's agriculture is largely monsoon driven or dependent on our monsoon and rain seasons. So despite being extremely far away, there's real food security implications of Arctic sea ice melt for over 1 billion people in India. And I'm sure Crevel will tell you that there are similar implications in the Caribbean.
What are those implications, Crevel?
Well, as Vedika mentioned, what happens in one part of a world affects another. And that's the nature of the global system. And so the sea ice in the Arctic has a global climate regulatory function. And for us in the Caribbean and similar small island developing regions, sea level rise is one challenge. And hurricanes, such as the one that recently affected Jamaica, is also a challenge in our region.
What do Arctic angels do? What's the role of an Arctic angel?
Vedika? This is one of my favorite questions to answer. So the Arctic Angels are a network of 74 young women climate activists, and we all come together to advocate for protecting the ice and the cryosphere. We're now representing almost 40 countries. I think we're at 38 by our last count. And one of our major roles is to demonstrate in person the real future generation and climate justice implications of losing the sea ice. You know, when you have someone from Trinidad and Tobago or India or Malaysia or Mexico standing up to say, hey, we need to focus our attention on protecting the Arctic, it really makes a big difference. And if I can say so myself, it's been quite the inspiring network to be a part of, because we come from all different walks of life. So you have scientists like Crevel and policy and law people like myself. We have entrepreneurs. We have people who are full-time climate storytellers. And what we do is allow the organization access to new audiences and new networks. And in this symbiotic relationship, the organization and our co-founders, Sally and Inga, can really pass on their wealth of knowledge from years in the climate and social justice space, offer mentorship and peer-to-peer learning. So in these various spaces that we're in, you know, one of our Arctic angels, Sanya, who's also from India, was recently on an expedition with Dr. Sylvia Earle into the Arctic, and they actually went into the Central Arctic Ocean waters, which I'm sure we'll talk about in a second. So she was able to wear her Arctic angels hat and collect information that's useful to us. Another one of our Arctic angels, Shie Bastida, who is an indigenous activist from Mexico, was recently honored in the Forbes 30 Under 30 list. And that's a whole new network that she can provide to us aside from her amazing organizing work with Fridays for the Future. So it's kind of an all-around symbiotic relationship to prove that young people really can make an impact and also to uplift young people that are already working in this space and introduce the Arctic to new audiences.
Vedika, describe a little bit more about what's going on in the Arctic and where is the Central Arctic Ocean and is it totally frozen and just why is that particular area at the top of the globe so important to the global climate and how rapidly is it melting?
Yeah, so, you know, most people will have understood that climate change has a really vast variety of consequences. And one of them is that the Arctic is warming at a really, really incredibly fast rate, nearly 3 to 4 times faster than the rest of the world. So the Arctic more broadly plays this whole system's role in influencing weather patterns elsewhere and having a knock-on effect. At Global Choices, we're obviously concerned about the Arctic as a whole, but the way that we direct our advocacy to have the most impact is by focusing on a part of the Arctic called the Central Arctic Ocean, or the CAO. It's an extremely remote part of the Arctic Ocean that is an area beyond national jurisdiction. So kind of in legal or governance terms, it means it doesn't belong to any one country. And it is a region that is largely frozen for the majority of the year. But the sea ice is retreating, you know. Since the 1980s, so the past four or so decades, there's been almost a two-thirds loss in sea ice or retreat of sea ice in the Arctic Ocean. And that's a massive, massive shift in what those ecosystems are meant to look like and has huge consequences for the peoples of the Arctic, particularly the indigenous peoples who've been stewards of those ecosystems for millennia, for other life in the Arctic, and also, as we've now explained, globally. So there is an opportunity to protect the Central Arctic Ocean because it remains frozen, and it's important that it remains in that protected, pristine state for as long as possible. And that's where we direct our work.
Kerrville, what activities are going on there now, and what activities might be happening there in the future as the sea ice melts and retreats?
Well, as Vedika mentioned, the Central Arctic Ocean remains largely frozen, so there's no large-scale commercial activities at the moment. It's mostly research. But due to climate change and the accelerated melting, exploitation of the resources that are possibly under the ice is an interest, and shipping across the North Pole. And these activities could be dangerous to the local ecosystem, as Vedika explained, and have global consequences, as we've been mentioning. So that's why we at Arctic Angels and Global Choices advocate for precautionary approach. And we believe that we have to protect the ecosystem because we cannot plant the ice as we do to address other of our global problems. And so that's why Global Choices is advocating for the 10-year moratorium on exploratory activities in the Central Arctic Ocean, which, as Vedika mentioned, is an area beyond national jurisdiction, so essentially a global commons that belongs to no particular individual.
Vedika, what does exactly the moratorium do, and what exploitative activities is it trying to prevent?
Yes. So as Kerrville mentioned, we are focused on this 10-year, minimum of a 10-year moratorium. Moratorium is another term for a pause. So effectively what we're saying is in this space where currently there's no large-scale commercial action, we want states to come together to agree to pause activities like fossil fuel exploitation, deep sea mining, shipping through the North Pole or transpolar shipping, unregulated geoengineering, unregulated commercial tourism, just for a minimum of 10 years. And you have to consider the Central Arctic Ocean as one of the last few ecosystems in the world where we have a unique opportunity to protect before we do significant harm. Obviously, it's been harmed by climate change more broadly, but locally, it's a space that's relatively free of human-induced pollution. There's very little noise pollution or soot from shipping or any other form of pollution, and that's what that ecosystem is used to. So these are all activities that absolutely are not essential. There's no need for them. And they would do so, so much damage rather than protecting the space, both locally and globally. And even if you think about it in economic terms, if that's the argument that's to be had, the cost to the global economy of lives and livelihoods being damaged by climate change is far greater than the benefit that short-term exploitation could bring to any one state or one company. We've been advocating for this for the past sort of 8 or 9 years, and it's a real collaborative, inclusive process to bring together lots of stakeholders, both in the Arctic and outside the Arctic, to make sure everyone who will be impacted can have a voice at the table. And here's one of the questions that we normally get that I might anticipate from UK, which is why we're focused on the 10 years. And the key thing here is that it's a minimum of a pause for 10 years. We absolutely would love for it to be extended and for there to be more permanent protection. And there are pathways now towards that. But we're also very, very aware of the realities of the Arctic region, the fact that the Central Arctic Ocean is smack dab in the middle of the United States and Russia, of the fact that companies tend to sort of agree to protection in the short term, and that makes it easier to protect in the long term. So we want something that we can actually achieve, and crucially, something that we can achieve before the exploitation begins. And finally, we're building on success. You know, areas beyond national jurisdiction often aren't governed very well because they fall under these loopholes. And there is some governance that exists in the Central Arctic Ocean. There's shipping-specific regulations that apply to the whole of the Arctic. So that's sectoral. There's also an agreement called the Central Arctic Ocean Fisheries Agreement, which is essentially a pause on commercial fishing in this exact same region. And that's also sectoral, but it was also multilateral and brought together different voices. We really just want to expand on what's existing and have a holistic path towards governance. And in a world that can seem really fragmented, really difficult, like there's lots of crises at once, this is a really unique opportunity for multilateralism to bring together lots of people, change how global governance is done, and have a real, real impact.
Yeah, that fisheries agreement was really groundbreaking and has set a good pattern for what could happen. But I wanted to ask you, how's it going? And are you trying to get countries to agree to this, or individuals, or who actually signs or participates in the moratorium? And how much support do you have so far?
Yeah, that's a great question. We are at the end. We would like to have signature from states. So that would include the Arctic states, as well as a key group of non-Arctic states who already have participated in things like the fisheries agreement. And we want to slightly broaden that coalition to include, for example, some of the small island states who face existential threats from the loss of the sea ice. How that's going so far is really, really well. We've had some really positive conversations with a whole host of states, including, you know, we've had endorsement from people like the former Secretary General of the Commonwealth, Patricia Scotland. And we've also tried a path where we understand that civil society support, support of Indigenous communities, support of young people is very important to demonstrate to states and to governments that this is a priority. And so we work with people like Dr. Sylvia Earle, who's one of our patrons. That's part of the reason that the Arctic Angels Network is so important, traveling and in their local communities, inspiring action. And so it's been going really well. We're now at a point where after doing this since, you know, I think maybe 2017, 2018, we've got a clear policy pathway towards how we can implement the moratorium. So what needs to happen in the multilateral world for this to become more than an idea and sort of a real implementable moratorium. And that work was done by three Arctic Angels, actually, including myself. So young people who have a background in governance and policy and can bring that perspective to the table in an intergenerational way. So it's been going really well. Obviously, we have more work to do, but we're really positive about bringing actors together to make this happen.
With the United States and Russia being two of the Arctic nations involved in this, and both of them not being particularly helpful at the moment, how are you seeing their non-participation? I assume they're not on board with this.
So presently, no, we haven't spoken to the Russian government and completely understand that this United States administration is not particularly climate focused and that there's issues with them and the Arctic. However, we also understand that not every decision is a high-level political decision and that there are pathways towards support. What we can do is galvanize as much support as possible within the European Arctic, within the North American Arctic outside of the United States. We can make sure that we're talking to non-Arctic states and make sure that there is momentum so that when there is the time and the opportunity to bring people together, it's doable. And I just also want to note that the fisheries agreement, I believe, was largely negotiated or towards the tail end of the first Trump administration. It was ratified by Russia, which does still participate in its conference of parties that are hosted in South Korea. There are ways to do it. And I think one of the key things around that is to have it be time bound. When you can convince states that they're not signing away any of their security concerns, it's much easier. And of course, we want to reiterate that losing the sea ice is a security concern and climate change is a security concern as well. So it's difficult to navigate, but, you know, we're doing our absolute best.
So does Global Choices work on other issues beyond this, or is this their sole focus?
Yeah. I mean, it's our sole policy focus is getting the moratorium across the line. And in a very sort of cooperative or symbiotic way, we work with the Arctic Angels. I mean, lots of our Arctic Angels, like, you know, you mentioned Crevel's primary focus is her research on microplastics, which is very interesting. That's what she does full time. But she's also involved in the Arctic Angels Network to advocate for the Arctic more broadly. So the organization is concerned with the poles, but really, really specifically the Central Arctic Ocean.
Crevel, how can individuals help in addressing these issues we've been discussing?
Well, firstly, educating yourself is important. So listening to this podcast is great. You can also visit our website, globalchoices.org. And there you can find a petition that you can sign to show your support. Remembering that we need to protect the ice while we have it.
I'm just going to jump in here and say, you know, when you're on our website or on our socials, you can also sign up to be part of our Arctic Ice Force. So you can receive our newsletters and input on how you can take actions in your local community, because showing public support really, really makes a difference. And speaking with both my Arctic Angels and my Global Choices staff hat on, and I would encourage anyone that feels that they're able to donate on our website, you know, even the amount of your weekly cup of coffee can make a massive difference, both in helping us advance this crucial policy work and in helping us uplift young women, providing them access to really hard to get into international spaces and conversations and really make an impact on lots of careers.
Great. Well, thank you so much, both of you, Vedika and Crevel, for all the work you're doing to protect the Arctic. It's so crucial that we protect and keep frozen this fragile place that helps cool the whole planet. And it's depressing to me that the United States has, in fact, just about totally withdrawn from these discussions at the international level, or at least stopped being a positive force in trying to rein in climate warming and actually doubling down on more fossil fuels and pulling us out of the UN organizations and treaties that deal with climate. So leaving us with the hope that other nations and organizations such as yours will continue their efforts to protect the Arctic, and that here in the United States, leaders will pursue climate action in spite of what our national administration is now attempting to do. So look forward to your success. That's all for now. See you next time on Hotspot.
You've been listening to Hotspots with Kay Brown, where tough issues meet thoughtful conversation. Stay engaged, stay inspired, and join us again as we spotlight the struggles, solutions, and stories that fuel resilience and change. Until next time, keep your fire burning. Hotspots is a production of the United America Network and is available on most major podcast platforms, as well as from unitedamericanetwork.com. This is what democracy sounds and looks like.
If you've had enough and want to wake up our recalcitrant Congress, join me on Democracy on Fire with Kay Brown for the top 23 reasons we need regime change now. Hope to see you there, Democracy on Fire on United America Network.